Hello and welcome to Tax Resolution Talk. My name is Jim Wade. I'm a tax attorney here in Maine. And in this podcast, I talk about all things IRS related. And in this episode, I'm going to be speaking with Jared Altman, who also does the same line of work. And we're going to be discussing the bad boys of accounting. Yes, those tax preparers gone wild, people who don't file their own returns and pay their taxes, or who help their clients get a larger refund than they deserve by either not claiming the proper amount of income or false deductions. So we'll talk first about a recent report from the Treasury Inspector General, as well as things you should be watching out for when you're having your return prepared so that you don't get caught up with one of these bad tax preparers. And then finally, if you're someone who is a preparer and maybe you're concerned about what the IRS will do to you, we also go through some things you should understand as a preparer to keep yourself out of trouble. And so without further ado, please enjoy this episode.
So today we're going to be talking about preparers gone wild. And basically what that is going to cover is a little bit of what's going on in tax accounting, tax planning community right now, as well as some of the repercussions for those actions. Jim has some cases in particular that he's looking to talk about, and some specific situations. One of the things to keep in mind for this is that the IRS is trying more and more to enforce its own due diligence requirements, frankly, on preparers of returns. From my perspective, they'll turn around and call that ethics, which is fair, but because they get to define the forms that we fill out. But the other side of that is really just the business risk of taking on engagements where you're required to do this due diligence and get it right and take care of the record, keeping requirements, everything else. So that's becoming increasingly straining for a lot of smaller preparers. And then there's also just people who are out there getting paid for whatever they can do.
Boys of tax preparation. Who would have thought those green eyeshade types could be so bad?
Yeah.
Well, because last time we talked about the TIGTA, that Treasury Inspector General report, they're the ones that audit the IRS. They were talking about that the IRS has done a poor job of examining high income buyers, otherwise people who haven't filed their return. And then maybe a couple days there, right after, they issued another report where they got at the IRS about not auditing tax preparers who haven't filed their return. Now, the amount of money that's at issue is a lot less, but the TIGTA considers it a real problem because 60% of all returns are prepared by paid preparers. So if the paid preparers aren't filing their returns, and or they're taking false deductions, not claiming the proper amount of income, all of these are corrosive to proper tax administration. So one of the keys in this report was IRS, get on it. And what's fascinating about this report is that the IRS has this information right at their fingertips. Jared and I both prepare returns, and as a requirement, we're required to get a P10. Which is an identification number for preparers. And when you do an annual renewal, you're required to tell the IRS what the status of your tax compliance is. And 30,000 people in 2018 certified that they were not compliant, hadn't filed their returns or hadn't paid all their taxes. So TIGTA says, wow, we better check on this. So they identified out of that 30,000, 10,495 preparers who prepared, according to their P10, a total of 2 million returns, but who didn't file a return for 2016. That's a huge compliance issue. The TIGTA even identified 100 people who had prepared, on average, 1,000 to 6,000 returns each, and who hadn't filed, returns. So they estimated, because they had an average, I think it was $187 average charge per return across the United States. So depending on, you know, where they were on the averages, they could have earned $9,000 to $1 million each.
Yeah.
And hadn't filed a return. So Tig does this, IRS, get on that.
Yeah.
And you know, what's interesting is the IRS actually has a fair number of these people in its system saying, hey, why haven't you filed a return or why haven't paid your taxes? But TIGTA says, look, you know, there's a large number of these people that are in currently non-collectible status, meaning hardship. They can't pay their taxes. But it says, look, if you count up the number of returns that they filed and use the average fee, they should be well above, you know, hardship status. They're not making less than median income, you know, or the poverty level. Dear IRS, get on it. And then there's a large number that aren't even being worked at all. And so they will eventually fall off because the IRS generally has, you know, only a certain amount of time to deal with it before it just gets stale and it just takes it off the inventory. Yeah. So the IRS, to its credit, says, well, of that 6,900 that you've identified that we could get about, I think it said 45 million from, we chose 449 of them this year to audit. So the IRS's response to TIGTA was kind of tepid, like, yeah, we're doing something, we just don't have the resources, or, you know, we're dealing with them like we are with every non-filer, not prioritizing it. And so TIGTA was like, you know, you really need to prioritize this. So we'll see what happens. I think this report is, you know, the other government agencies sort of putting the spurs to the IRS saying, you need to get moving on these things. So I expect that as part of enforcement, we're going to see this start to take a priority. You know, all of us that are reading these reports that are in the resolution community are like, wow, this is pretty egregious, because it makes professionals look bad when you've got bad apples. You know, most people that do their, whether enrolled agents, CPAs or attorneys, meet their requirements, file the returns, this sort of stuff just makes us all look bad. So there'll be pressure to start to get on this. So we'll see what happens. Anything else to say about that? No, those were the highlights. I could go through the mind-numbing detail of the report and what the recommendations are and our responses, but I think best to leave it at that and say, if you're a preparer and you haven't been following your returns, you may get a visit.
Yes.
Or if you are a bad preparer who hasn't paid their taxes and you're in currently non-collectible, you may expect that you're going to get a letter checking in on, hey, why don't you file that return, because we want to know what you're actually making, at which point you'd get out of that status and back into active collections. So, oh, I actually, while there's a pause, you give me a moment to say something, I'll fill it. And there's something that happened last week that I thought I'd bring to the audience's attention as sort of a, just a helpful hint, putting aside bad prepares. If the IRS comes to your door knocking and they have their badges and they have pistols on their side, that's the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. That does not bode well for you. I had someone contact me last week. He had the IRS come knocking at his door. Unbeknownst to him, the IRS at that same time was also raiding his office to seize records, and they just wanted to have a chat with him. And before you know it, he says, I've got nothing to hide, and he's talking to him. Then he contacts me, at which point I don't do criminal tax matters. I referred him off to a criminal defense attorney, and I had asked him, hey, did you talk to him? Yep, I talked to him. I told him, you know, I'm not nothing to hide here. And, you know, he answered some questions, including like how does businesses operate? You know, he hadn't filed for a number of years, in which he admitted to them he hadn't filed. Not many people know this, but it's, if you make more than sort of, you know, poverty wages, you should file return. And if you know that you should file return and you don't, that's a misdemeanor crime. It's called willful failure to file a return. So now he's already built the case for him. He's admitted, I hadn't filed my return and I knew I needed to. So lesson learned is, if the IRS comes knocking at your door, especially if they got guns on their hips, things are not going to look good for you. Best thing to do is say, I can't speak with you right now. I want to talk to a professional first. That's, you are well within your rights to do it. Even if it never goes criminal, you don't want to essentially give them a roadmap.
Yeah.
you know, or give them bad information, at which point your accountant will fix it, but the cat's out of the bag. They've already got, you know, they already think something different about your case, you know, and it turns out that you just, you know, you didn't know what to say and you filled in the blanks. Because I've actually had someone confronted with the IRS say, you know, I have some partners. He has some partners, but he was just trying to explain it all away in hopes that they would just leave him alone and he would deal with it. Well, he just made his case much worse. So just be careful. So I think our next topic was going to be the IRS's Dirty Dozen and prepare penalties.
Yes.
Actually, I don't know about you, but I've been following the Dirty Dozen for a number of years, and it seems that within the last couple of years, bad Apple preparers have really started to move more and more prominently on up that list. Because it used to be one thing. Now there's three or four different parts of the Dirty Dozen that involve bad preparers, or at least significantly involve bad preparers. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are. I think you're right. I mean, there's I remember when I first looked at this, and I don't remember when that was, but I remembered, you know, abusive tax shelters, frivolous tax arguments, offshore tax avoidance, you know, fake deductions, false padding. You know, some of these involve professionals, but they're not normally what we think of when we say preparers, at least in my head. You know, these are sophisticated tax maneuvers in some case, especially the tax shelters and offshore tax avoidance. And it seems like, to me at least, that the IRS is starting to include more. I mean, it's still high, but low to low high income issues on the Dirty Dozen, as opposed to just looking at the really big things. And obviously, frivolous tax arguments has always been there because I just get sick of hearing those. But you know, it seems like it's becoming more everyday tax fraud.
Oh no, no, I don't know about you, but I love listening to frivolous tax arguments.
Yeah.
They come in so many different varieties. They're very fun. Don't forget the fringe on the flag there. It's means just, it has to be done in a maritime court. but yeah, it's true. There's been a sort of a sea change in what the IRS has been focusing on, and there seems to be a little bit more garden variety stuff that impacts the general taxpayer than before, where it was a lot of the wealthy, the sort of attorneys and accountants cooking up tax shelters kind of stuff, you know, or syndicated conservation easements. And there's a couple other big things, but more and more bad preparers. Don't know why that is, you know, whether it's maybe an erosion in professional accreditation, you know, people don't have that sense of duty, or it's just generally that, you know, people, more and more people, they're, taxes become complicated, they have to go to pay prepare, and there's not enough competent preparers, or people are looking for a deal, and so you get the less competent preparers, and so competence / intentional bad acts, there's a fine line there, incompetence, but yeah. Those people are the ones that are sort of leading the charge on getting taxpayers into trouble with these false deductions, these, you know, false claims for credits, you know, not reporting income, things like that. Because, you know, I read, I'm a nerd attorney, so I'm always reading court opinions, and you'll find more than the fair share of people getting in trouble with the IRS about these sorts of things. And then inevitably there's I relied upon my taxpayer to do it. Some of these probably are lies, but I'm sure there's a fair amount of people where, you know, they go into it, they, you know, times are tough, and somebody's waving money in front of your face saying, hey, I'm going to get a huge refund. You know, you don't look as closely as to how they get there, and you don't ask questions about it, you know?
No.
And you know, and it is a little bit hard, because if you are in a certain income tax bracket, you do tend to get large refunds and legitimately. Yeah. So it sometimes, as you know, your kids grow up, you know, no longer you can claim the credit for them, or maybe your income increases, you can't claim those credits anymore. You start to feel the pinch, and you know, the preparer gets you some nice deductions, and hey, things go on the way they were. And you know,
it looks like what it used to look like.
Yeah, and for many people, the returns now are so complicated. You know, you're supposed to sign under penalties of perjury that everything's true, accurate, complete. But how would you know?
Yeah.
But you have to be careful. I think it's
especially if you get into, you know, if you've got multiple depreciated assets, you know, class life recapture, you know, there's a reason you hire a professional, because, you know, that's just not something someone can do off the cuff unless they've been practicing and become familiar with that stuff for years. And even then it changes. So
I guess part of the bringing up this dirty dozen is if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And if the IRS does change your return, you may be able to get out of some of the penalties if you had a bad repair, but you're still liable for the tax and the interest on the tax. So it's, you know, you got to be real careful, because if you're not living on a lot of money, you know, another $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 of tax for, you know, the returns that are examined and changed, that's a huge burden. You know, I have clients who owe substantially more than that, but you know, to someone at a low income bracket, it's painful. You know, they don't have money hanging around.
Yeah.
You know, they can't liquidate real estate or, you know, cash out a retirement account to pay it. So maybe to be a little bit more specific, you know, if someone is suggesting to you to claim a business that you don't have, or, you know, you have a hobby that suddenly you look at your return and now you're getting all these deductions for a business, you want to ask yourself a question if that's legitimate. And, you know, because it used to be in high school, they'd teach you about doing tax returns, you know, doing your own return. It doesn't hurt to educate yourself if you can. If you don't, just be careful about looking at that bottom line. If when you first go into the preparer's office and you owe money, and the next thing you know, you go, can you do something about it? And then you come back and now you've got all these magical refunds, you know, substantial refunds, then you really should ask for a second opinion from somebody else. Don't ask from someone in an office, but maybe ask for a second opinion before you file it.
Yeah.
And definitely if someone starts suggesting to you that you can share dependents with other people that you're not related to,
yeah,
that is definitely a no-no. And there's obviously, finally, I'll wrap up with, there's other obvious schemes where they say, well, if you do this, we'll split the refund. Absolutely don't do that.
Yeah,
At which point, you're engaging in tax crimes. So let's see. So I think we're going to talk next about prepare penalties.
And I would say the other thing, the one caveat I would say to that is if you're under audit, or a refund is challenged and someone offers, if they're legitimate, they'd probably call it a contingency fee rather than splitting the refund. But there are certain circumstances where something is under challenge, where someone might do something that sounds like splitting the refund, but it's never going to be on an original return for the most part.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. If someone says they'll do return and they'll base their fee on the amount of refund, then definitely walk. Though that's absolutely prohibited.
Although, in case someone listens to this, I will say that there is, after Loving, there have been some people who have been pushing back on that. The IRS still is of the position that it's prohibited. And Circular 230 still says that it's prohibited. But with the Loving Preparer case, there's some questions, potential holes in their argument, but I don't think they've been fully explored yet.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
It's just what constitutes a return preparer is the issue. And who, or actually, it's not what constitutes what a return, what constitutes practice before the IRS. You know, if you're a CPA and you're not engaging in representation, you're doing the accounting and you're filling the forms out, obviously you're not just a scrivener, but is that representation? The IRS says yes. Some of the courts have said maybe not, and depending on how that develops, that might change. But I wouldn't want to be the test case.
Yeah, no one wants to be. Was it pioneers get shot or have arrows in the back. So don't be the pioneer. So I think the next one was, we're going to move on to prepare penalties. I think for those of you who are preparers and maybe who come across this, you know, like I said, you know, be careful of the IRS is sort of watching you. What the areas that they, what has happened in compliance is that you'll oftentimes get an audit, not of you, the preparer. It'll be of, say, you're meeting the requirements for due diligence for, say, the earned income tax credit or the child tax credit. And then at the time of the audit of that due diligence, the IRS will look at your compliance with the tax laws. So they'll look to see if you file a return, and that will trigger it. So I guess keep your both your returns clean by filing them and your due diligence, because the last thing you want is to have, you know, problems with those requirements and owing a lot of penalties, and then have them look at your return and get smacked with that too. So be a bad day in your office. So let's start with the basic penalties. You know, there's been a lot of push by the IRS to, I guess maybe I call it outsource audits to the preparer community. And they do that by putting requirements on preparers to do a certain amount of due diligence when we're doing a return. And if they don't, they can lose their license to practice before the IRS. And they take on a kind of, you know, first you have Circular 230, which is the ethical rules. And you can be penalized under that. And sometimes if you're penalized by the IRS, if you're a CPA or an attorney, you could lose your state license. Under Circular 230, so if you lose your license there, well, you know, there's no other repercussions by the state. But for enrolled aid, I'm sorry, for CPAs and attorneys, you need to watch out. That could be held against you, as is failing to file a return. Then it takes the form of just basic due diligence. So if someone comes into your office, you can't sort of turn a blind eye to the information they give you. So for example, someone comes in, you know, they have three children. They're working on a golf course, living in the golf course. This actually happened. And their income is, I think it was like $6,000. And you go, well, how, you know, sure, they're living at the golf course, so maybe there's something being paid for them to work on the golf course, but they have three kids and a wife. How are they paying their expenses? So you just can't blind eye that. You have to then do some follow-up questionings to say, okay, well, you know, how are you making ends meet?
Yeah.
And in this case, there were no good answers. But the person could say, you know, I am transitioning to a new career. I had some money saved up from when I was a venture capitalist. All right, great. You know, document that in your file. And you can go forward, you know, at least knowing that when you do the return, you have some answers. In some cases, you may want to go a little more in depth if, you know, someone doesn't have good answers. The answers are kind of don't strike you as reasonable or not, you know, not common sense. So then you might have to dig a little deeper, put some more notes in your file. But where you really start to get into enhanced due diligence is with head of household filing status, child tax credit, educational credits, and the earned income tax credit. Now there's this sort of additional requirement that you go through. There's a form, I think it's 8867. I never know these off the top of my head, but I try. And that form says, okay, look, if someone's doing this credit, have you done the worksheet? You know, there's a worksheet to figure out the credit. Has it been done? Has the client given you the information you need to do that? If there's anything that strikes you as unusual, incorrect, or incomplete, have you had follow-up questions about that? If so, what questions did you ask? What were their responses? Have you documented those responses? And then, you know, this all has to be kept together as part of the due diligence file with the return, and it's kept for, I think it's about 3 years. There are certain exceptions where it could go longer, but generally it's about 3 years. And that's the package that you have to keep for that. And if you don't do that, then you can be penalized over and above the other penalties.
Yeah, I think then it's $500 per return per credit.
Yes. It's indexed for inflation, so it's 530 for this year. And the firm itself, if you have someone who gets hit with one of those penalties, if you didn't meet certain due diligence to make sure that they were doing what they're supposed to, you as the firm can also be penalized. And then we get to the sort of outlier penalties. These are things where if you have a client who's engaged in a potential tax shelter that's been identified by the IRS, there's another form that you have to put on the return to identify it. Otherwise, you could be penalized. If it's just on the return where, you know, it's maybe the law is not absolutely clear, so there's an arguable position there, you may have to disclose that as well to help you avoid penalties. It's not necessarily you're penalized for not putting a statement, but if you want to avoid a penalty later, you want to have that with the return. So that's sort of the prepare penalty scheme. You can get into the details, and oftentimes it just becomes more confusing to go through it all. But just when you're doing these returns, you have to start asking yourself, what do I need to do to CYA? Let's just be blunt. CYA.
Yeah.
It's in essence a form of malpractice insurance doing this stuff. And the IRS has definitely been pushing the due diligence for those credits and the head of household status. That has been a huge area of noncompliance. I think the money lost to incorrect or false EITC claims that earned income tax credit are in, you know, double-digit billions. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk about there's been a lot of effort by the IRS to audit the poor and not the rich. What they're really referring to is the focus on the earned income tax credit fraud. And just because it's been so pervasive. Fair, not fair, but it's just been a very big focus.
And the other thing to that, we probably don't have the precise specifics, I would say, where, you know, it's sometimes it's fraud and sometimes it's honest misunderstanding, is that the family structures that existed, or at least we talked and legislated about when these credits were created, don't really exist at the level and in the proportions they did anymore. So, you know, you have lots of situations, especially here in Maine, where, you know, people aren't married, or, you know, they have kids from one person and not for the other, but there's been no legal adoption, you know, or they've been, you know, living together for the last 15 years and have kids, but, you know, they're not technically, you know, one of the parents' kids, even though they've been with them since birth. You know, those are the kind of situations too, where, you know, well-meaning people who, you know, answer the questions without understanding that there's a very precise meaning behind these questions could get into a lot of trouble. You know, I had to explain to somebody one time that, you know, no, they couldn't get the earned income credit on, you know, their three kids that, you know, they had basically taking care of all of them from, you know, one, three, and five respectively for the past 10 years. No, they couldn't claim that credit because they weren't their blood relatives and they hadn't been adopted. So, you know, there's some of that too. You know, if you're not kind of meeting the typical isn't even the right word. If you're not,
it's definitely, you know, non-traditional families.
Yeah, if you can't fit yourself in the box that Congress legislated, it's really easy to get yourself in trouble too.
Yeah, and let's not even get started on divorce and separated couples. That's been a nightmare too. So even traditional couples are having trouble with these credits. It's just very complicated. Nothing fits in a neat box. And there's a lot of people that get into trouble for that. So, you know, I think the IRS, you don't get a lot of details about these audits unless you get it from anecdotally from someone telling you about what happened. Yeah. But the IRS has sort of said, look, if you are prepared and you do make a mistake on these due diligence, if you can at least show that you're trying, you know, that you tried to meet the requirements, that they may, you know, not assert the penalty. They may just say, look, you're getting a warning. Make sure next year, if we have to come back, that things are different. But you would, but the firms that have been really hit by these due diligence are the larger unenrolled, well, I should say unenrolled, they're people who are not licensed preparers. They're not an enrolled agent, CPA, or an attorney, similar to H&R Block. I don't think H&R Block has been hit, but it's Liberty Tax. I can't remember the other one.
Jackson they have gotten Hewitt, perhaps.
Jackson Hewitt, yeah. They've been hit by these because the people just, you know, don't even try to meet the requirements. Don't keep the files. Don't ask the questions. In fact, they found where a lot of times, if there is anything, it's sort of a cut and paste, you know, fill in the blank. It doesn't look like it's made specific to the client. It's just to, quote unquote, meet the due diligence. So yeah. That's the stuff that gets you into trouble. That's the one where you really get hammered to the wall. For those who haven't been paying attention to this, Liberty Tax, you know, the founder was enjoined, meaning he can never prepare returns again or own a company that prepares returns. And the company itself has had to enter into an agreement with the government to be monitored about its compliance with due diligence and other requirements. So don't want to end up in that place, especially if you prepare a lot of returns.
Yeah, because, you know, he can hire, you know, the other thing, they can hire a legal team to deal with that. You know, you and I can't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so I think that's all I had. I don't know if you have anything more to add to it.
No, I think we were mainly talking about the, you know, there's the Dirty Dozen tax kind of schemes. There was prepare due diligence. There was some of the penalties that are associated with that. And then I think that was it. Looking back through my notes and I didn't see anything else. Let me check one more place to see if we had talked about anything else.
Actually, there is. While you're doing that, let me add one thing. I did find there is a form. If you as a person or as a fellow preparer know of the IRS terms, abusive tax preparers, you can use form 14157 to file a complaint. And you also have to file, there's a form 14157A, which is the affidavit that you fill out to attach to it. So you can report those people. And sometimes, I hate to appeal to people's mercenary instincts, but sometimes there are monetary rewards. So if that helps you turn in a bad prepare, helps, you know, proper administration of the federal government, and, you know, maybe puts money in your pocket. So worth a shot.
Yeah, looking back, that was pretty much the bulk of it. We had a little bit of a longer conversation last week because we had two big topics. But the big thing was just that they're starting to crack down on preparers as well. You need to be aware of those due diligence requirements. And also, potentially, even if you're a taxpayer or even just a preparer who's not familiar with it, you know, look at those Dirty Dozen and the other things that they talk about over the years, because those are things that they're targeting. And, you know, in some cases you might find out that, you know, something someone's been trying to sell you as a tax planning strategy is in fact, you know, on there. It can sound really good when someone else is got a whole sales presentation around it and it looks really polished, but you know,
yeah,
it's like a really polished version of what you're seeing on that website. You know to run away.
Yeah, and we'll post in our respective formats. I'll have on my podcast, I'll have a list of some of the resources you can click the links to if you need more information. And I think what we'll do is we'll definitely have a discussion here soon about the due diligence in detail, because I think it's a misunderstood what you need to do. I did hear someone speak a couple weeks ago about prepare penalties and due diligence more specifically. And, you know, I felt that his understanding of what was required was much more, required more than really needed to. You know, for example, copies of birth certificates, social security numbers, where if you read the IRS's frequently asked questions on the topic, you don't need to get that from the client. You just need to ask if they provide it upon examination. At least that's what the IRS says. So we'll talk about all the due diligence stuff. And I think it'll be interesting discussion, because it goes to the heart of, you know, what's an accurate and complete return? What are you required to do to meet your burden for being a good return to the IRS. So just some interesting stuff.
Yeah. And we can also extend a little bit of that too, because it follows a lot of it, you know, other submissions to the IRS. It's, you know, it goes along with the preparation, but it also, you know, you're not held to radically different standards for anything else. So nice little segue into some other things as well.
Well, Jared, it was a pleasure talking to you again this week. I'm sure we'll talk again soon, hopefully next week. I know we got the holiday coming up, so.
Oh, yeah, we do. Yeah. I always forget about those until somebody's like, hey.
This COVID-19 world, days, indeed holidays, they all sort of blend together. So, all right, Jared, well, thank you much for interviewing me, and we will talk to you soon.
Okay, talk to you soon. All right.
Thank you for listening to this episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you found it useful or informative, please let us know. My contact information is in the show notes. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you have any suggestions for future topics to cover, please let me know. My contact information is in the show notes. Also, if you or someone you know is dealing with an IRS problem and you're tired of being afraid and scared about what the IRS is going to do to you, then reach out to me by phone or by email, and I will talk to you over the phone about your problem. I guarantee that in our 15-minute free consultation, we're going to be able to see what the problem is and what your possible resolutions. So don't have another sleepless night or stressful day. Reach out to my office by phone or by email and get on the path to resolving your IRS problem once and for all. Thank you again for listening to this podcast, and have a wonderful day.